Brian, why did you leave all those sad letters for your wife? You aren't dead.
I was going through a dark period.
No, you weren't. What are we watching today?
We are watching Airplane.
Surely you cannot be serious.
I am serious. Grab your popcorn. To grab your popcorn, I am your host Brian Kroc. Along with me, as always, is David Kalisa.
Hey, welcome back, everybody.
And as you heard earlier, we are going to be reviewing and discussing the movie Airplane.
Yes, cult classic comedy
from 1980. The movie is one of these films that pretty much everyone I know has seen, with the exception of David.
Oh, no. I've seen it now.
You've seen it now, but you hadn't seen it before when I suggested it. So.
No, that is true. That is true. But it was just because it was way before my time, and there are a lot of movies are out there.
This movie was 2 years before I was born, so.
Just was never on my radar, and it was one of the few that just was not in my parents' household to watch when I grew up. So a little late to the start, but it is now in my library.
And there were a lot of movies in your parents' household.
There still are. Let's be straight here. But
my parents have like a wall next to one of the chairs. If you recall my parents' house,
yes,
and it's just continued to grow.
If my mom wasn't so fond of all her beauties up on the entertainment center, I'm pretty sure my dad would have it filled with movies if he could. Then that'd be okay with me. But no, I watched it for the first time, and I have to say I enjoyed it for what it was. I will give it its due credit, but it does not rate high up there for me, in my honest opinion.
And that's understandable, because for me, it's one of those movies I saw when I was younger, and it was absolutely hilarious when I saw it. But I don't think the movie has aged as well as some of the other movies that we've watched already.
No, I can completely agree with that, especially with some of the content that is shown throughout of it, which we will definitely hit as the episode goes on. It's a little hard to translate, but you can tell, take a step back from it, kind of put yourself back in that era when it came on, and you can definitely get some good laughs out of it still.
Yes, yes. So this is what is known as a satirical disaster film, as in it follows the tropes of your standard disaster movies of, the setup. This is what is happening. This is the disaster that is about to happen, and then our heroes get to go through the movie and rescue everybody from said disaster. The humor of it comes from the fact that they throw as many jokes as they possibly can very quickly, and you will not catch them all the first time through.
No, I guarantee I missed probably half of them just trying to keep up with it, and also just trying to not tell myself this is so stupid.
Yes, you will tell yourself that if you have not seen it already. Because it is definitely a goofy film. It's not, I was going to say a goofy movie, and then I was like, but it's not a goofy, because a goofy movie is a goofy movie. But there you go. There's my old school humor for that one. But yeah, it is a straightforward, just off the wall, goofy film.
Yes, and it's like you said, it's a little bit cookie cutter. It's set up very well, and
it's
predictable.
But here's the thing. It had to follow the disaster film tropes.
Yes.
But on top of that, like, this movie was the movie that set up like a bunch of other similar genre films. So without this movie, you don't have like the Naked Gun series.
You also probably don't have Hot Shots
or Scary Movie, like any of that kind of stuff. This is the movie that really set that kind of stuff up. Now, Mel Brooks obviously did his own thing with, Blazing Saddles and History of the World Part 1 and, and then going forward after that. But this was the movie that really kicked that genre into high gear.
Set up the foundation for everybody,
yes,
is what you're saying. I got it.
And it's also what established Leslie Nielsen as the comedic god that he is.
I'm going to be honest with you about this, too. I'm not a Leslie Nielsen fan either.
Oh, you just don't get it, man. You just don't
It's
get
not
it.
That I don't get it. It just doesn't. It's not my. It's not me.
I know. I understand that. I'm just, for me, though, like his ability to deliver lines in just the complete most straightforward fashion, but say the most absurd things is complete brilliance.
I will completely agree with that. Like that's some very, very good acting right there.
So yes, before we actually get into the other, you know, plot points of the film, the movie one was pretty much made and the cast was picked purely because they were a lot of like non-comedic actors. That's why they were cast in these roles.
Really?
Yes. The director and the writer were basically like, no, we don't want comedians in this movie. We want people who can deliver serious lines in a humorous way, but still maintain an air of seriousness.
Okay. I mean, it worked well for him, obviously.
Yes.
It was definitely a smart move on their part. I couldn't imagine going to your money man or, you know, other, you know, people at Hollywood that you have to talk to and be like, so this is our plan and this is what we want to do. And
yes,
just the amount of dumb looks that they probably got, like, are you serious?
Yes. However, this movie cost $3.5 million to make.
How much did it make back?
$180 million.
So everyone got a pretty good paycheck is what you're
saying.
Everyone
got an exceptionally big paycheck. If they got, you know, some of the percentage of the box office.
Well, and especially, you know, taking into account 1980, you know, making almost $200 million back then, that is
quite
a feat.
First off, I'm going to say that I botched the number. It's actually $130 million, but still.
Okay.
But still.
$50 million less.
$50
oh my
million
God.
Less, but still. It's, I mean, 3.5 to 130. So, yeah, I mean, that's still exceptionally good. So people still made a lot of money doing that, which is also then why it spawned a sequel, Airplane 2.
The sequel.
The sequel.
How witty. Not.
That's kind of the point.
I know.
Oh man. All right. So let's set up the film, okay? We got our cast being introduced separately. Of course, you've got the captains, like Captain Over and
Captain Roger.
And Captain Roger. Oh, what was the other? It was Victor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What Vector? Victor Over Roger. Roger. Roger Over.
Yes. And then the co-pilot though was played by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he was Murdoch.
Yes. As he was very adamant to make sure that little kid knew he was Murdoch, not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, even though he was wearing his basketball shorts as part of his uniform. He is not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Get that right.
So, but yeah, it introduces the cast, which of course it's a multi-person cast, because everyone has their little small parts. But the main character is Ted Stryker, which of course is an action name,
very action name,
who is traumatized as a war veteran, and
with a
drinking problem, But after having some trouble in the military, he now has a pathological fear of flying. But the point is that he's trying to save his love life, or the love of his life, who is Elaine Dickinson. And she works as a stewardess at that time. Not called a flight attendant at the time, a stewardess. And she works on the airline, or works for the airline, and she is taking a flight away, and, you know, she left him a note saying, I'm leaving you, bye, blah, blah, blah. And he's rushing out there to try and win her back and ends up buying a ticket in the smoking section of the plane and then proceeds to cause the deaths of at least three or four people.
And also abandoning an old man at the airport who thought he was a taxi driver.
Yes.
and has a fare of like $16,000.
Yes. So Ted and Elaine are the main characters of this movie. But following in their footsteps is, of course, Leslie Nielsen, who is Dr. Rumack.
Yeah, he's the doctor that is on the airplane who is going to tend to all these people who get food poisoning from the fish. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. So that's the main disaster that happens, is that the people who ate the fish on the plane, they're the ones who get sick. But unfortunately for them, all three of the flight crew ate the fish.
Yes.
I did crack up, though, when they showed the captain, and he's like, look, you know, and they're discussing in the background about eating the fish, and he looks over at the plate.
it's just bones.
It's just bones of a fish.
It's like, the skeleton of the fish. Perfect.
I was like, I wonder why the airline would serve just like a whole fish.
They might have back then.
I don't think they would have.
First class, maybe?
I think they would have still done filet, you know, like...
Lord knows, all we know is that that fish came from a bad part of town.
Yes.
And caused almost the demise of half the people on the plane. And it had some very bad side effects, as you can tell from when Leslie Nielsen describes them all. And the pilot acts them all out in the cockpit.
I almost wondered if, like, that wasn't just done up, like, almost on the spot. Like, it would have been great to find out that Leslie Nielsen basically improvised all of that.
He's doing this and this, and the pilot's just like, okay, I better start doing all this.
I know that could be
involuntary muscle twitches.
Because drooling. The drooling is the one that actually says that it was planned out. But because if he'd said drooling, like, there's no way you just drool on command.
No, you have to save that up. But if everything in between, maybe that's what he improvised. He's like, okay, he's got to save it up for a little bit. So I'll just name off all these other things, give him a little bit of time, and then I'll do drooling around as the last one.
Yes. That's kind of how it all goes about, is that people all get sick on the plane, a bunch of people get sick on the plane, and then this leads to them having to be rescued by Ted, who has to overcome his fear and land the plane and rescue everyone.
Basically by himself.
Basically by himself, while being coached from a former officer that he knew.
Yes.
And that's really it. That's the plot of the movie.
There's no sublining. There's no ulterior motives going on. There's no terrorists that are going to try and take it over. And, you know.
Isn't Die Hard 2.
They're not trying to take the bearer bonds from the belly of the plane. It becomes his job to land it. And then that's when, in my opinion, the real hilarity of the entire film ensues.
Yeah, the last, like, 15 minutes of the movie are just top-notch comedy, in my opinion.
Yes.
Because it's just joke after joke after joke after joke. There's, like, zero setup time for any of them. And they're all just really quickly delivered. But one of the best running gags at the end there is, of course, Leslie Nielsen stepping back in and just says, like, just wanted to let you know, it's like, we're all counting on you. Good luck. Like, something along those lines. Like, but he does it like three or four times.
Yeah, because it's like he just forgets, or just that's just like his line.
And even after the plane lands. But yeah, it's one of these films that, you know, obviously the storyline is so kind of pointless. Like, it's a basic setup for a film. That, you know, you almost kind of figured somebody has written the serious version of this, like, at some point in time.
Which, isn't that kind of where they got the idea for this film? Wasn't it a movie or a TV show that they bought rights from? Something along those lines, and that's kind of what the setup was. Because I remember reading at one point, you know, through my years, that... it was closely resembled to something that the writers and directors bought rights to, and people were too, you know, some of the producers were afraid that it was just going to be too closely resembled and people weren't going to be able to sort of differentiate or not enjoy that it was so closely related to that.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this right now. It was kind of based on previous disaster film genres.
Right.
Particularly the 1957 Paramount film Zero Hour, from which it borrows the plot and the central characters.
There it is.
As well as many elements from Airport 1975.
Okay. There you go. So there was a little bit, you know, they had to put in a little bit of originality of what they wanted to cause happen, but a lot of their foundation for the film was kind of already pre-set up.
Yes.
For this and whatnot, which is good because then... you already know that it's something that people relate to, that it works well with people, what people are watching at that time.
Yeah.
So it was also smart that they did that, you know, so.
Yes. So, you know, since we've got the plot basically covered, and I mean, it's really just gags in between mm-hmm. all of this basic setup. But what were some of the things that you actually really liked about the film?
Really, it'd have to be the delivery of everything from, you know, the actors and actresses, just yes. little different scenarios that you find themselves in. My favorite character probably would have to be, his real name is Lloyd Bridges.
Yes.
The father to the great Jeff Bridges. He's kind of like the, you know, overall boss of the airport.
Yeah, in Chicago.
Yeah. And he just kills with his lines. He
definitely has some of the best gags in the entire movie.
It was just a bad week for him to quit all of his bad things, all of his opiates, his cigarette smoking, his coffee drinking, and his glue sniffing.
But it's even the way he delivers those lines is like, it's picked a bad day to stop smoking. And then he immediately pulls out a cigarette and starts smoking. But the glue sniffing one is the one that cracked me up the most. And if you're going along with drug related humor, when the one passenger offers the lady some whiskey and she like reacts abhorrently, like, "Dear God, no." And then immediately proceeds to pull out a little mirror with cocaine on it. It's that kind of humor I like, you know, the messed up kind of demented, obscure stuff.
We are in agreement there. Absolutely. But no, it would, throughout the movie, everyone had their own little quips and quirks that relate to, you know, scenes like, you know, what Lloyd Bridges had.
Yes.
That I did enjoy throughout the film. I don't think, especially only having seen it one time, I'd like to watch it a few more times, see what I might have missed, and maybe I'd be able to give a little bit more accurate answer. But as of right now, Lloyd Bridges has my torch for favorite scenes.
Yeah, he definitely has some of the best scenes. I would still probably go for Leslie Nielsen as my favorite part of the movie, just because it's Leslie Nielsen, which then led to like Police Story and the Naked Gun movies and all of that. But the fact that he delivers the one line that nearly everybody remembers, even though they may not remember where it comes from, and it's the "Surely you can't be serious. I am serious, and don't call me Shirley."
And then the other funny part that I liked that was recurring was they'd always bring up, "Oh, you got a big envelope from, you know, the government. Oh, really? What is it? It's this building over here, but that doesn't matter." And that was a recurring joke through the film. Right. I thought that they delivered that really well, and that it was really well written for the movie.
And they also do that later on with the cockpit joke.
Yep, they do it. I believe
like,
a total.
He's like,
"I
need some
times.
Help with the cockpit." He's like, "What's that?" He goes, "It's the tiny room in the front of the plane."
But that's not
like,
important.
But that's not important. Yeah, I love that one, and I love the fact that Mrs. Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver, isn't it? Like, isn't that who that was? Oh man, I'm blanking.
What was she doing in the scene?
She is the one who spoke jive.
Oh, I did not even relate the two. She, you know,
I'm looking it up real quick. I'm looking it up. Where is it?
That was a great scene though, and to know that those two actors that, you know, that spoke it in the film were the ones that wrote those lines and delivered them is quite excellent as well. I think that those would have been some funny characters to work
yeah,
with.
Yeah, she was June Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver.
So it's totally out of character to hear Miss Cleaver speak some jive.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, that was the entire point of that
of
scene.
Of course, yeah.
They're like, "Let's get June Cleaver to do it." And they're like, "Okay, sure." But, yeah, the jive scene still just cracks me up, especially in the beginning with the subtitles. I loved
basically,
it.
Basically, let's translate the jive into just some straight white honky lingo.
I loved it. That was so good. Okay, so yeah, there are highlights throughout the movie that are extremely funny. I think in the beginning, the setup is a little bit, you know, long on some of the jokes. But when they start hammering away, it's like the movie got better as it went on. But yeah, in the beginning, the movie, like, the jokes just don't land as hard.
No, it's a little long-winded because you're trying to figure out what the buildup is, who's doing what and everything. So,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, you feel like they're just filler things that they just threw in there to give you some entertainment while the credits are rolling and, you know, things are happening.
Yes. But also one of my other favorite scenes, though, in the movie is when Kramer comes through the airport and he's just beating up all the religious people.
Yes. Just laying the smack down.
But I love, though, is that one weird, like, flip maneuver that he does.
That's pretty awesome.
And I was like, holy cow, he actually did that.
More power to him, because he executed it very well and it looked awesome.
Yeah, it's just, it was so good, though, because he's just, you know, like one guy's like, you know, have you found Jesus Christ? Ah! And he's like, what about Buddhism? Ah!
And something you could totally relate to, because you know that there are things like that you just get bombarded with, and that is exactly what you want to do to people.
Yes, yes. But there are, you know, literally 100 jokes in this movie that I could go through and be like, oh no, that was funny. No, oh, that was funny. You know, so all that. So picking like the favorites for me, like I'll keep it to like the three that I listed. So, but huge shout out to Otto for stealing the show. Otto, the autopilot. Because he definitely has some of the funniest moments in the entire movie, including stealing the ending.
And he's also the only one that got, you know, pretty lucky during the whole film, too.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And in case anyone, any one of you that are listening to this are fans of Otto, he actually has his own Facebook page.
Awesome.
Go like it.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Go like it. See what he has to say. See what he's been up to lately. You know, see what him and the inflatable wife that he flew away with are up to these days.
Auto T autopilot. It's run by Paramount. That's hilarious.
There you go. That's your little tidbit for the day.
So, yeah, that's funny. All right. So, what didn't you like about the movie?
I would have to say just the overall sense of humor of it, like the tone of it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't want to say picky, but I guess I'm just kind of very, I guess I am just picky about how, you know, things are set up or delivered and whatnot. Plus, it's out of my realm. You know, like I said, it's before my time, and, you know, not being old enough to maybe understand all the references or just, you know, remember the things that, you know, they picked fun of throughout the film. As, you know, I've learned that they've made jabs at multiple other films and shows and stuff throughout the movie. You know, I probably, if I understood where most of those came from, I'd probably have a little bit better appreciation of the film, but that's just natural. That's going to be for anybody that is in that situation.
Yeah. For me, it's like I said before, like, I don't think the movie has aged as well. Some of the humor just doesn't land. Because they're either time references, like things that were popular like back then,
right,
that made a lot more sense.
Exactly.
Like more pop culture references that just don't make any sense.
It was things that were relevant or that had just happened around that time frame.
I did crack up though when Ethel Merman showed up.
I was happy when that happened.
He thinks that he's Ethel Merman, and then it's Ethel Merman. Yeah, that cracked me up.
And the only reason I recognize her is because of her great, great role in Mad World.
Yes.
As the mother-in-law that you just want to murder.
Yes. So the other thing that obviously I, you know, wouldn't have cared for, some of the jokes were just like, okay, it's like, you know, this just does not fly today. Like some of the jokes that were presented.
Well, the main one for me in you know, the most way would have to be the pilot's dialogue with the little
the
boy and everything, you know, obviously with everything going on today.
Yeah.
And whatnot. I mean, you know, you watch that scene and you just kind of cringe like, this is definitely not funny.
Yeah. This is definitely not funny now. Although, and especially because of how long it goes on, had it just ended with just like the one line, it's like, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
And then, yeah, okay.
Like, but then it, like, that might have just been funny. It's like, but then it's like, you know,
every other scene,
like,
that
have you ever been to a gym? Like,
have you ever been to a Turkish jail?
Do you like watching movies about gladiators?
Yeah.
And, like, I was just like, oh, okay, dude, chill. Like, this is no longer necessary in this movie.
And it's no longer funny either.
Yes. But those were like the ones that, like, it just doesn't play today. And I'm not even saying like some people have talked about how Blazing Saddles, like, you know, is not a movie that should be that should be like viewed today because of the content of it. And I'm just like, are you seriously? Like, it's one of the greatest anti-racist movies of all time.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
They're like, but it uses the N-word. I'm like, yeah. To a hilarious effect.
A lot of things today still use the N-word, and those are okay. So why wouldn't that be?
So that's where I was like, you know, these types of movies, obviously Airplane is different than Blazing Saddles.
Right.
Blazing Saddles was like a cultural commentary as well as being an extremely humorous film. Airplane is not a cultural commentary whatsoever. And so some of the jokes just don't land these days.
And that's what happens sometimes. You know, you're not going to anticipate your movie to be, you know, still, you know, so thought of, you know, 30, 40 years later.
Yes,
and you're also
yes.
not going to know how the world's going to turn out, obviously. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. And
yes.
They just have to deal with it.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into the primary cast.
Let's do it.
Let's see here. Where is this guy? I've got him right here somewhere. I don't. Ted Stryker, played by Robert Hayes. Yay! Sorry, I got my laptop open here, and I'm trying to figure. If I were smarter, I'd put all this in order so I knew exactly where I was going to go. Obviously, he was in Airplane. He was in Airplane 2. He was in Superhero the movie. He shows up in a bunch of other random films, which, you know, are. Like, I mean, that's basically what this guy does.
Yeah, I mean, and from what I can tell, nothing was, like, super blockbuster,
mm-mm.
you know, mega well-known or whatever like that. He kept working. That's about as much as you can say for him. Which is a shame because I thought for what his part was, he delivered it really well. And,
yes.
And everything like that. But I guess he just kind of maybe got typecasted or just had a bad agent.
I will say this, though. He was the voice of Tony Stark / Iron Man in the 1996 Spider-Man, the cartoon.
Okay, that's pretty awesome. It's a pretty cool character to voice.
Yeah, but he, I mean, he kind of just shows up randomly in a lot of other movies. He does show up in Superhero movie as Blaine Riker, which is pretty funny. But and I think the last one they did it was 2016, the movie Boonville Redemption, where he played Pastor Rain. But before that, he was in Sharknado 2, the second one.
I have no words for those
movies. They should have just had him come back as Ted Stryker. That would have been even more hilarious. Yeah. So let's see. Let's go ahead and move on. We got ourselves. Where is Elaine at? God dang it. There she is. Julie Haggerty.
She has done quite a bit since then.
She has done a ton of stuff. And if you actually look at her IMDb photo, she has barely aged. Barely aged. I mean, like,
it's amazing what Botox and makeup can do.
She honestly looks like she's, you know, like maybe in like her, you know, like 40s. At most.
But she'd have to be, what, in her 60s by now?
Close. She was born in 55.
Well, yeah, it's okay. She's getting there.
June 15th, 1955 in Cincinnati, Ohio. It was a spring day. No, but she's gone on to do a bunch of stuff. Let's see, a bunch of different TV shows. And, man, I'm trying to find some of these other ones that she did. Oh, she was on the TV show Cupid. How about that? Yeah, but she, god dang, her IMDb page just keeps going. I'm not even like two Airplane yet. I'm in the 90s and it's still just, good lord.
I told you she kept busy. Yeah.
Oh, man.
She's a working gal.
Yeah. And I mean, she's one of these actresses that just like shows up like in films and TV shows. She's done a ton of TV shows. The last thing that she ended up working on was Steps, which was a TV movie. But she's also been on Gracie and Frankie, Trial and Error. She's a voice actress for Family Guy and New Girl and a bunch of other stuff, too. So, yeah, she's been steadily working since that movie came out and probably before that. So, no, not before that. Airplane was her first movie.
Wow. Well, no, that would explain
that
the steady work.
Yeah, that explains a lot. Yeah, she did that and then, like, did a couple of other films and then did Airplane 2.
Apparently, when you blow an autopilot, you get a lot of work later on in life.
Yeah, no.
But she was driving.
Yeah, she's done a ton of good stuff. Now let's get to the heavy hitters as far as like the movie is concerned, because I mean we've got three very, very serious actors here that just
heavy hitters
as far as serious. So let's start off with the Mac Daddy, Lloyd Bridges.
At first, I thought you were gonna say Leslie Nielsen.
No,
I was gonna fight you.
No,
because he is not as handsome as Lloyd Bridges. That is one dapper looking gentleman.
I still will always crack up when he's standing there at his desk with the cigarette in his mouth, and the picture behind him
is
him in that exact same pose. It's like it's so great.
You can tell, you can definitely tell where Jeff got a lot of his acting ability, his sense of humor and everything from. He is just an outstanding actor.
Yes.
They did get to star together in Blown Away. I don't think they were father and son. I can't remember, but that was really neat seeing them collaborate together. They did really well in that.
Oh, that
was an early 90s action flick.
The Bridges brothers?
No, not the brothers. Jeff Bridges, Lloyd Bridges' son.
Yes.
They got to star together in Blown Away with Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
the bombs
that one.
And everything. Excellent, yeah. Excellent film.
It's been a while since I've seen that one.
Awesome to see both of them do that. But no, Lloyd Bridges, he also has an outstanding movie career as well. And I personally think, you know, looking back on, you know, some of his movies and everything like that, stuff he started, I personally think he would have been a great addition to The Great Escape.
Oh yeah, he would have been very good.
He would have been awesome. I don't know who they would have casted him as, because as we discussed on that podcast, they casted everyone perfectly. But I felt if they had another spot or another character, he would have been awesome.
Yes, absolutely. So I mean, let's go back to what he's done, which I mean, started his career in 1936 with an uncredited part on the movie Freshman Love. He had a ton of uncredited going forward. Uncredited, 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 uncredited. I'm still going up, still going up. Still massively uncredited. And then he got into a movie called Passport to Suez,
mm-hmm.
where he played a guy named Fritz.
Yep. That's your generic like henchman name.
Henchman number four.
See? No. You go from Fritz to henchman. It's just what happens.
And then from there, he kept working on it. Good Lord, 1952 was a busy year for him. TV show was in the movie High Noon. That's the one. High Noon. I was like, man, I remember him from a movie, and he was amazing. And then it's like it finally, after looking at it, it's because he was Deputy Marshal Harvey Pell. From High Noon, which is one of my all-time favorite westerns. So, yeah.
Hard not to be.
Yes, yes. So, it keeps going, and it's just nonstop.
Well, you think if you started acting in the 30s, you know, that's a solid 70 years of acting.
TV shows. He had the Lloyd Bridges Show, which was a TV series from 1962 to 1963. The Loner. Of course, Mission Impossible, he was on an episode. San Francisco International Airport in 1970. But here's the thing. He was basically a straightforward non-comedic actor and had never done a comedic film as far as the directors or writers knew. And so they brought him on to be comedy, and he nailed it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely nailed that part. So unfortunately, we lost Lloyd Bridges in 1998. But man, his legacy has continued on with his kids.
Yes.
Who have done an amazing job. And in fact, I think Jeff is coming to town.
Yeah, he's doing No.
I'm confused.
Yes.
My fault. My bad.
John Goodman,
his co-star, is coming to town, which isn't exactly, I mean, that's exciting, but
that's
super
exciting.
But I mean, Goodman's here like three times a year, so.
Yeah, but to do a screening of The Big Lebowski,
yeah,
is phenomenal.
Yes.
That is epic, and tickets are already sold out.
Jessica tried to get tickets, but they were sold out. So, yeah, there you go. That should tell you something. John Goodman should just show up and just, like, do his movies at the pageant.
Oh, dear God.
Like, just, you know.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Like, all right, next up, we're doing King Ralph. Okay. All right. I think we can do that. But yeah, no, it's one of these. I mean, obviously, his Lloyd Bridges has.
It runs in the family.
Yes.
For sure.
It runs in the family and is still going on today. I think Jeff Bridges, even in bad movies, is still a good actor.
Like R.I.P.D.
Oh, God.
Where he just brought his character over from True Grit.
Yes. But it's also like, hey, let's make a movie that's basically Men in Black, but not. And now they're making another Men in Black.
A spinoff?
It's a spinoff. So I'm hopefully Will Smith will make a cameo at least, but he's not the principal
player. Tommy Lee Jones to make a cameo.
Well, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones can do whatever he wants. So.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, on to the next actor. We got Peter Graves, whom born 1926, died 2010. But he is, of course, known for a bunch of stuff, including, you know, Airplane and Mission Impossible.
TV show or movie?
TV show.
TV show, okay.
Yeah, going back. So Peter Graves... Oh, he was in Men in Black 2. That's funny that we were just talking about that.
What was he in Men in Black 2?
He was Peter Graves in Men in Black 2.
Oh, he probably had him up on that one screen or whatever like that. Okay, yeah, with Michael Jackson
Dennis
Rodman. Okay.
Let's see. He was had a small part in Adam's Family Values. Let's see. The Love Boat. Yeah, that's the other one. The Love Boat. Yep.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Oh, yeah. but Fantasy Island. Let's see, then Airplane 2. But Buck Rogers in the 25th Century TV series. I mean, he just, yeah, he's one of these dudes. But it's actually his time on Mission Impossible that was like the thing that made him super famous, because he was James Phelps in that TV show, and it ran for 143 episodes.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's an impressive run.
You know, which is just a few more than the current movie run.
Yeah, they're on like, what, 10, 11?
I'm pretty sure they'll be still making Tom Cruise-based Mission Impossible movies after he dies. They'll just use, like, holograms and stuff.
They'll have the technology, too, by then.
Yes, exactly. Or in true Mission Impossible fashion, it's just somebody in a really realistic mask.
Oh, yeah. They're just going to pull off the Ethan mask, and it's going to be the new actor.
Now, here you go. Okay. Here you go. Going back to my love of Westerns. Okay, so he was in the movie The Virginian. Or he was on the TV show The Virginian, which was, you know, a really good show.
If you say so. I don't remember it.
And he, of course, started working in 1951.
Only 20-something years after Lloyd Bridges.
Just goes to show you that Lloyd Bridges was the Mac Daddy of them all. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to Robert Stack. Of course, Robert Stack is well known for exactly one major thing.
What would that be?
Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, dear God.
He was the host of Unsolved Mysteries.
The voice that you hear late at night. When nothing else is on TV.
It's like, little did she know that she would be the last person seen alive by so-and-so.
Little did you know I'm going to punch myself in the face for watching these on repeat for 20-something years.
But Robert Stack, he shows up in a couple of these other just like super crazy. Like he was in 1941. It's like he did a character in Beavis and Butthead Do America.
That's awesome.
A great movie. And it's one of those voices. It's like when you hear that voice, you're like, holy crap, that's Robert Stack. It's like, or that's the dude from Unsolved Mysteries.
That's pretty much what anyone's going to know him as.
Yes, yes.
That's the voice.
Yes. But he of course, has been in a ton of movies and TV shows.
I'm going to hate to ask this. How many episodes of Unsolved Mysteries did he do?
Oh, I got to find it. I got to find it. Unsolved.
I feel like that's a good quip that we must plug in here real quick while we're on the subject of his voice.
Oh, man. I'm trying to find. How many episodes of Unsolved Mysteries were there? Because it doesn't actually have it listed there.
What?
I'm looking it up. Hold on. Give me one second.
I'm going to find it quicker
than you. Wait, the 1990 series or the 1987 series? I don't know. Was he on both?
I wouldn't doubt it. Either that or somebody wore a really impressive mask.
10 seasons of the 1990 series. So that should tell you a lot.
Holy crap. So he did well over 100, maybe 200, close to 200 episodes of it.
Yes, he did a lot.
Wow.
And I'm trying to see if they have anything listed here. No, they got nothing listed for it.
Well, right. That's what I was curious about. Good deal.
So Robert Stack, the voice of the dude, host of Unsolved Mysteries. Everybody knows that one.
Co-star of Airplane. Okay, we got it.
Got it. And, of course, on our final list here, Leslie Nielsen, who is still one of the greatest straight men in comedy. That's what they call it. Okay, so because there's the funny guy, and there's the straight guy. That's how they define it. So, I mean, you go back, even like the comedy duos of before, there's always the one guy who delivers the line very seriously.
Okay.
And so that's why they call him the straight guy, because he's the one who delivers everything very seriously.
Interesting.
So you even go back to something like Who's on First. You know, it's a comedian and it's a straight guy.
Oh, okay. Got it.
That's what they call that.
Took it really out of context.
Yes, of course you did, because that's what the modern derivation of the word means, or, you know, or context for it. But yeah, he's one of these guys that you can give him a line that is the most absurd line you could possibly give him, and he will deliver it with such belief and seriousness that you cannot help but laugh at the things that he says. Because it's so deadpan, it's just hilarious.
And then you imagine yourself, or you try saying it, and you can't say it without laughing.
Yes. One of my favorite lines, and I don't know why this line has stuck with me, besides the surely you can't be serious line, is in one of the Naked Guns, he's in prison, and he's complaining about the food to the other prisoners, and he says something about the wine. And he goes, this wine is chilled, and everyone knows it should be served at room temperature.
So stupid.
I lost it. I was like, I don't even get the joke. I was like, but as a kid, I was just like, oh my God, that's funny. But honestly, I would say that which one of the, it's the one Scary Movie, I think Scary Movie 3.
Yeah, that's when he started appearing in it.
That's when he started showing up as the president.
Because 1 and 2 were Wayne's Brothers oriented, and then 3 and on were pretty much without them.
Yes. And for me, that one was the funniest Scary Movie.
Oh, no. No, that's where we differ.
You know, of course it's where we differ, because you and I have different preferences in comedy.
Well, that, and it's also apples and oranges. The first two are rated R. All the others are PG-13. So it's two totally different realms of comedy.
Yeah, but any movie that you can basically have Leslie Nielsen in and then also simultaneously the Wu-Tang Clan, I'm going to say that's a better movie. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. So Leslie Nielsen, of course, well known for Airplane, the Naked Gun series, and a ton of other great comedic roles that he was in, almost to the point where it's like, if you actually go back and watch the other movies that he did before he was a comedic actor, and he's like delivering these lines, you almost expect them to be funny when they're not. And so he's kind of hard to watch in the serious roles, like after you've already established him as a comedic actor, because he just doesn't. He delivers these lines and you can't help but laugh at them no matter what.
So after you watch it, you typecast him.
Yes.
And then that's what sticks in your head. Kind of like Robert Englund, how you can't see him in any other role other than a horror role.
Yes.
Or a serial killer.
Yes. And here's the other thing, too, that actually led to the Naked Gun movies. He was in the TV series Police Squad, which was canceled after something like 6 episodes total. And it was canceled, I'm not kidding, for being too funny.
Too funny.
Too funny.
Wow. What a bunch of Nazis.
They didn't think that the average audience would get it because there were so many jokes. They thought that they would miss too much of the show. And so they canceled it. And because they canceled it, then somebody was like, screw it, I'll make my own story. And then they did the Naked Gun movies.
And made millions.
And made millions. Police Squad could have honestly been on for a very long time, but it's just, you know, it is what it is.
I'd have sent those guys like a $10 check saying, here's your cut. Thank you for allowing Leslie Nielsen to be free because of your stupidity.
Yes, yes, yes. So, yeah, Leslie Nielsen got his start in 1950 in the Actor Studio, which was a TV series, in two different, like, episodes. And then from there on, just proceeded to hit up a bunch of TV shows and more TV shows and more TV shows and even more until finally he did Forbidden Planet and then got a movie role. So
never saw it.
I've never seen it either. So I just wanted to get into a couple of the other characters, though. There are other actors that show up in this movie. One being Jonathan Banks,
okay,
who is plays Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad and now Better Call Saul, of which he is one of the best parts of that entire series. Are two different TV shows, but he's so well known now for Mike, like being just another one of those like deadpan, like straightforward, you know.
He's a serious actor in the show.
Yes.
He's deathly, scarily serious.
Yes. and he's not in Airplane.
No.
But you hardly ever see his face, and he has hair, and so you hardly would recognize that he's actually in the movie.
But once you do know it's him, you definitely recognize his facial features, mm-hmm. because as soon as you pointed him out to me, I'm like, oh my God, nose and eyes, that totally sets him off.
Yes.
And then you see him check a turkey in the microwave.
We also have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is, of course, not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's Murdoch.
He's Murdoch. He's been hearing that crap since UCLA.
My dad says that you don't hustle unless it's the postseason.
Like hell I do.
yeah, of course, Barbara Billingsley, who is June Cleaver, of course, is the Jive Lady. And then I'm trying to see who are some of these other ones.
What a great film credit. The Jive Lady.
Yes. some other random people there. I love in the cast, it says Otto as himself.
Yep.
Howard Jarvis, who showed up in a bunch of different, things. He was the man in the taxi, actually. He's one of those actors who you're like, hey, it's that guy. Like, and you never remember his name. And then, I'm trying to think of who was it? The one air traffic control guy who was constantly, you know, what can you make of this? Oh, I can make a hat. I can make a brooch. I forgot the dude's name.
I don't remember hearing the name in the movie, though. I don't remember, like, them going, hey, you. I don't remember his name.
Oh, they say his name. I just don't remember what it is. But
he was pretty goofy. He stole a lot of scenes, I felt. He had some good lines, and he was just quirky. And
the only lines that I don't really care for, though, were still the all right, we're going to the tower, Rapunzel, and I was just like,
shut up.
You're done. Your jokes have stopped.
We get it. You're gay. Landing.
Yes. Even at the point of like the earring and stuff too, like the one earring on the side, because then it's always like, oh, that's the sign that somebody's gay.
Why did you say that in a Sean Connery voice?
I don't know. It just that happened to come out that way. It was not. All right, here we go. His name is Steven Stucker. Steven Stucker.
Thank God that T's in there.
he was the manic control room worker Johnny in Airplane. He was also in Kentucky Fried Movie, which is the movie that really like was this similar thing before that. Did not do much after the 80s. So unfortunately that is just how it goes. Yep.
He got stuck.
Yep. So this leads me to then a random other character who has like no lines in the movie, but he's one of the people that kills himself, and that is James Hong, who plays a Japanese general who commits seppuku or harakiri, and as Stryker or whatever is telling him his stories, and everybody keeps killing themselves. But this guy, also weirdly enough, he showed up in RIPD as well.
Yep.
So it's funny that you
that's Jeff Bridges,
yes,
Earth part,
yes,
his cover, whatever you want to call it. So, hilarious.
So he's one of these Chinese actors, though, that is like anytime that they're just like, we need a Chinese actor, all right, get James Hong. I mean, he's, let's see here. He was in the movie Chinatown, obviously. He was in Airplane.
Balls of Fury.
Blade Runner. Big Trouble in Little China. As David Lopan. He's freaking David Lopan. All right. One of the best Chinese villains of all time.
He is also...
And then Wayne's World 2, he was Jeff Wong, or Wayne's girlfriend's father.
He had a very integral part in an episode of Seinfeld as well.
Yes.
Worked at a Chinese restaurant.
Cartwright. Yes. he voiced Chifu in Mulan. He did a voice on Jackie Chan Adventures for 2 years. He was Mr. Ping in the Kung Fu Panda franchise.
That's what, yeah. The panda's father.
Yes. Yes, he also voiced a bunch of different characters in Avatar: The Last Airbender.
What's that?
Really? Really gonna pull that one on me? That's the show that's going to be a live-action series on Netflix.
Yes! Can't wait.
So, there you go. Yes, but he started working in 1954 and just kept doing a bunch of different movies and a bunch of different TV shows, and he's one of these... other actors that shows up in everything that they ever need, a Chinese character or an Asian character of any kind. And that's him. Man, he's still going too.
Yes, he is. Still very active. Got to make that money.
He was a voice in Sherlock Gnomes.
Probably as one of those little Chinese trinkets. Knowing how racist Hollywood is.
But yes, I remember he wasn't RIPD. He was the what's his name looked like.
Ryan Reynolds.
Reynolds,
because Jeff Bridges looked like the hot woman or whatever.
Yes,
and
yes.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds, he got to look like an old Chinese dude, and he was upset about it.
Yes. but yeah, I'd say definitely for me, I remember him from Big Trouble in Little China, which is one of my favorite, like, 80s action movies.
Oh, still is.
And it's one of the quoted movies here in the office. By me and Everett.
Uh-huh.
Because as all of a sudden, it'll just, you know, we'll be talking about something, and then I'll hear somebody across the room go, "Well, as your old pal Jack Burton always says," you know.
And then whatever.
Yeah, and then... So, yeah, that's one of the movies that we are constantly referencing. I always liked Big Trouble in Little China just because it's so just goofy in parts and yet so well thought out in others. And had, like, some super cool little things in there that just were awesome. But
yes.
The other three, like the storms or whatever, the three guys that they fight, the wind, lightning, and thunder or whatever, I think is what it was. Those dudes are so cool. Love those guys. And I remember seeing, like, the guy who played Thunder. He's the one who expands and then blows up at the end. like, I remember, like, seeing that dude show up in other movies. And it was just like, hey, it's that guy! Yeah! So there you go. I mean, this James Hong is just in a crap ton of movies and a crap ton of TV shows. Probably has the longest IMDb page out of anybody actually on this list.
Oh, yeah, hands down.
Like, even beyond Lloyd Bridges, who started in the 30s. Like, I mean, it's just nonstop acting with this dude. And, I mean, he looked old to begin with. He looks like he's barely aged, like, in the last 40 years.
I think him and Keanu Reeves must share the same medicine.
I'm not sure he's not immortal, you know, like the Highlander. So
Keanu Reeves is our generation's Highlander. How cool is that?
He does seem to not age, like, which is very cool. So.
That's very awesome.
I do like,
especially as long as, you know, his body keeps up with the non-aging process and can just keep making
John
Wicks.
And I'm still hoping for another Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
It should be in production, or at least going to start.
It's what it says.
Yeah.
I weirdly enough, like, because he played Ted, right?
Sure.
Yes, he played Ted.
I can't remember.
And the other,
I have a 50-50 shot.
Bill and Ted. Got it. Going to search for Bill and Ted. Cast. I was just trying to find the other dude's actual name. Oh, why is this?
Because he's on board with it, too. Both.
Alex Winter. Yes. Yeah. So Alex Winter, you know, is in a bunch of different things. I actually saw him, though, because he came to St. Louis a couple years ago during the St. Louis International Film Festival.
Oh, cool.
And he was debuting his latest film because he's become a director since, you know, kind of transitioning out of acting. And he was just like, I was there and I was at Blueberry Hill. And then all of a sudden he's just walking past. And I was like, holy crap, it's Bill.
It's Bill. It's
and,
Bill.
And he's just like walking down the street, you know, just like going down Del Mar, just like checking out the sights and stuff. And I was like,
cool.
Oh my God. Like, had I been outside, I totally would have like shook his hand.
Fanboyed.
At least fanboyed for a second. But yeah, this.
It'd have been cool if we saw a phone booth around, if you're able to get a selfie in a phone booth with him.
Yes. All right, so we have veered off into other movies as we usually do. But
I hope you're all still listening.
I would say that, yes, that Airplane is one of these films that I think that you kind of have to watch just because it establishes this kind of humor that is still going on today. While I think this kind of humor has been played out recently with some of the movies that they've made, and like they're super low budget, and like Superhero the Movie is just, it's not a good movie. Like, I don't care what anybody says. But yeah, it's kind of played out now, especially with like Scary Movie 18 that they're on, and you know, just whatever. But this movie is good because it establishes a lot of this stuff, but just watch it for some of the best comedic scenes from very serious actors. Like, seriously, Lloyd Bridges. I picked a bad day to stop sniffing glue, and then proceeds to sniff glue. And gets this look on his face that is just hilarious. It's just, watch it for those types of scenes, and you will not be disappointed.
And if you don't fully get it, understand, laugh at the whole movie, remember you're not alone. I didn't either. But overall, as I said, I am glad that I got to watch it and see this, you know, foundation-making movie finally.
Yes.
And it's been good.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it myself. What rank would you give this movie?
I'm going to give it just a solid 5.
Yeah, I could see that. I'll probably, because it's one of those movies that I feel people should see, but it's definitely not one of my favorite movies. So I'll give it like a 6.
Okay. That's fair.
You know, I think most of the time we're in agreement about things, like, or at least fairly close. And I think that we're pretty much in agreement with this, that it's a funny movie, but it could be done better now, I think.
I mean, you know what? They kind of rebooted Vacation, and I thought they did pretty good with that. If they rebooted Airplane, I'd give it a shot.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't know who they would get to.
I don't either, but you know what? That's part of the gamble that you take.
Maybe it could launch another serious actor's comedy career. Either way, folks, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please find us on any of our social media stuff. Things out there. We've got the Grab Your Popcorn page on Facebook and the group and whatnot. I think we're on Twitter. I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. I haven't checked.
I don't look at it.
I'm sorry. I don't use Twitter myself. I'm very sorry about that. But we are working on getting some more stuff done and trying to put out some more episodes and that kind of stuff. But if you enjoy the show, please let us know. Find us on Facebook, or you can just send an email to, I believe, info@grabyourpopcornshow.com. I think that is the correct email. Don't quote me on that. Go to just the grabyourpopcornshow.com and find out from there. I'm sorry. I don't even know my own show. This is horrible. I'm a horrible host. But please join us next week as we go through another film. And don't forget, folks, grab your popcorn.
Goodbye, everybody.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.